Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Quimry. An initiative that gives youth in crisis more opportunities to connect with services is up and running in Juneau. The Safe Place program trains businesses and organizations to connect youth who feel unsafe with social services in Juneau. Hannah Jenkins is the outreach coordinator at Juneau's city-run youth shelter, Sheyi Hot Hit. She learned about the program at a conference and says it seemed like a good fit for Juneau.
So the idea is that you bring on businesses and organizations, usually where we know youth already feel safe and already go when they have nowhere else to go, and they agree to be Safe Place sites. So their employees are trained.
Jenkins says if kids and teens aged 10 to 17 are feeling unsafe, they can come to one of these places and an employee will connect them with the shelter staff who could do crisis management and figure out next steps. Participating organizations and businesses include all staffed fire stations, the Juneau Police Station, the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, Kindred Post, Both City Pools, Glacier Cinemas, GME Family, Clinkett and Haida's Wayfinder program at Floyd Dryden, and the Zach Gordon Youth Center. The initiative is coming to Juneau at a good time. That's according to Jordan Nigro, the city's youth services manager. She says youth refer other youth in crisis to the shelter, and in the summer, there are fewer opportunities for someone to notice a young person needs help. She says it's important that young people know that providers are in their corner.
You know, I think one of the things that kids often find when they come to shelter is that their voices are heard, and some of them may feel like their voices haven't been heard in quite some time.
The Zach Gordon Youth Center is hosting a Safe Place launch party tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Youth can meet staff from participating organizations, eat food, and earn prizes. A full list of safe places can be found on the shelter's website. Youth can also text the word safe and their full current address to 44357 to find the nearest safe place. An 89-year-old woman died in Juneau today from injuries suffered during a vehicle crash on North Douglas Highway yesterday afternoon. According to an information release by the Juneau Police Department, there was only one vehicle involved in the crash. A 62-year-old woman was driving, and the 89-year-old woman was a passenger. Police have not released the woman's names. They were driving down the highway when the vehicle left the road, drove into a ditch, and hit a tree. Both people in the vehicle were injured during the crash and were taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital. Capital City Fire Rescue responded to the crash. Police say the crash is still under investigation and are seeking information regarding the crash from the public and any possible witnesses. And Republican lawmakers are working to repeal the roadless rule through Congress at the same time that the U.S. Department of Agriculture pursues an administrative rescission of the rule. The 2001 roadless rule prevents new roads in national forests, including more than 9 million acres of the Tongass National Forest. The rule has been rolled back and reinstated in a ping pong between Republican and Democratic administrations. Utah Senator Mike Lee tacked on a repeal of the rule to the proposed Wildfire Prevention Act before it passed out of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee in an 11-9 vote on Wednesday. Next, the bill will be considered by the full Senate. Senator Lisa Murkowski voted in favor of repealing the rule at the committee hearing.
In Alaska, the roadless rule has been a real challenge for us for decades. Most Alaskans maintain that the roadless rule should never have applied to Alaska. We didn't ask for it. We consistently opposed it.
But a 2020 poll of Alaska voters found less than half were in favor of eliminating the roadless rule. Nationwide, almost all the public comments submitted on the latest administrative rescission effort are in favor of keeping the rule, according to an analysis by the Center for Western Priorities. Murkowski says her intent isn't to open up more land to clear-cut logging in the Tongass. Instead, she says it's to open up pathways for renewable hydropower projects. Nathan Newcomer is the Tongass campaigner at Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a nonprofit that advocates for keeping the roadless rule. He says it already allows for the construction of utility infrastructure.
In fact, there have been examples already in the Tongass National Forest in roadless areas where hydropower projects were allowed to move forward, so that's just false.
That includes the Whitman Lake Hydroelectric Project near Ketchikan and the Blue Lake Hydroelectric Expansion in Sitka. According to a U.S. Forest Service fact sheet, the agency can't prevent hydropower development approved by the Federal Energy Regulation Commission in roadless areas. The USDA's administrative rescission of the roadless rule is expected to be finalized this year. And the University of Alaska's newest and largest union filed an unfair labor practice complaint against the university last week. The union alleges the university interfered with bargaining rights and retaliated against union members. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports that a wage increase is at the heart of the issue.
The Coalition of Alaska University Employees for Equity, or COSUAW, formed in April. The union of more than 2,000 includes permanent staff at the university, such as people who work in financial aid, advising, communications, and other areas. Earlier this month, it filed an unfair labor practice charge against the University of Alaska. The union alleges the university violated state law on two fronts. One was by reversing course on supporting a 3% wage increase for staff during the legislative session. That's according to Jeremiah Humans, a senior data center technician for the university who's on the union's bargaining committee.
There was a path forward for us to get the 3% raise, and that the university worked against us in getting rid of that from the budget.
The university's budget request for the upcoming fiscal year included a 3% wage increase for non-union employees, as well as raises for union members based on collective bargaining agreements. State law requires salary raises for union members to come from collective bargaining agreements that the legislature approves funding for, which CAUSE does not have yet. Human says these raises are important to members.
Not having this wage increase is, in former President Pinney's own words, threatens the stability of the university. Like others in Alaska, we're struggling with rising cost increases, particularly with the rise in oil prices.
Humans explains the second way the union claims the university is violating state law.
The university continues to retaliate against us by soliciting people to leave the unit in exchange for that 3% increase.
According to the filing, the university HR director sent an email to a group of university employees stating that some people might receive a 3% wage increase if by the end of the fiscal year they submit an objection to their inclusion in the union. Jonathan Taylor is the director of public affairs for the university. He says the university has not violated state law on either front. He says the university communicated to staff from the beginning of the election period that they would not qualify for a 3% raise for the next fiscal year.
In state law and in case law, it's black and white. We can't pay increases to representative groups without a legislative appropriation and a contract.
Taylor says the claim about asking people to leave the union is untrue. He explains that prior to the union election, both parties couldn't agree on whether certain positions belonged to the union. But he says there was an agreement in place to review those positions after the election. Taylor says the email mentioned in the filing was to notify finance staff that there are people who might qualify for a raise after both parties determine whether the positions in question do or don't belong in the union.
It's basically saying, look, we know that there are some people who are eligible who may end up getting pulled out of the unit because they weren't put in there correctly. They shouldn't have been in there to begin with. And if they do get pulled out, then they will still get their increase.
Taylor says the university is working to get through the contract process, which is how union staff will be able to get a raise.
The big picture for us is trying to do right by our employees and making sure they have correct and accurate information and moving towards actual contract negotiations so that we can resolve some of this uncertainty that I think a lot of our staff are experiencing.
The university can respond to the union's charge, and the union can then file a rebuttal afterwards. A hearing examiner investigates the case and then issues a finding, which usually takes 90 days. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And Alaska is one of only two states that saw increased participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program last year. That's despite most other states seeing a decline. The increase in users could be attributed to changes the state has made to improve operations within the federally funded food assistance program, including to the State Department of Health. The Health Department has been working to prepare for federal regulations that target states with high error rates within the SNAP program. Although the rate in Alaska has decreased over the years, it still has had the highest error rate in the nation going back to 2022. The Health Department said state investments have all been a part of a broader effort to process applications more efficiently. Their newest update allows Alaskans to apply for multiple public assistance programs via their phones. Still, changes so far haven't addressed the root issue, according to SNAP Outreach Manager Megan James at the Food Bank of Alaska.
I mean, if they put as much progress on the back end as they did the front end, they'd be in a lot better position. But until they get the EIS system updated, it's forget about it.
Health Department officials say the end goal is to make it easier for Alaskans to apply for and manage their benefits, while also improving tools for staff. Upgrades currently underway include updates to notices, making it easier for applicants to understand eligibility requirements, and implementing a virtual assistant for staff to improve decision consistency. And the minimum wage in Alaska will jump to $14 on July 1st. The increase comes after voters passed ballot measure 1 in 2024 to gradually raise the state's minimum wage. The measure increases the hourly minimum wage in the state from $13 to $14. Next July, it'll rise to $15. The minimum wage will increase with inflation starting in 2028. The measure also ensures all workers accrue paid sick leave based on the size of the employer. Businesses with more than 15 employees are required to allow workers to accrue and use up to 56 hours of paid sick leave annually, while those with fewer than 15 workers must allow up to 40 hours. The measure passed with nearly 58% of voters in support. When it passed, minimum wage workers in the state were making $11.73 per hour. Minimum wage workers tend to be young, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Several other states and cities are also increasing their minimum wages on July 1st, including Oregon, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Even with the bump, Alaska has the lowest minimum wage across all West Coast states. And a federal judge late last month ruled against a group of Alaskans seeking to force the state to process applications for food assistance on time. The decision ends a years-long legal effort to hold the state to timelines in federal law. In 2023, 10 Alaskans sued the state after the Department of Health failed to act on their applications for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program within the 7 to 30 days the law requires. The suit came as thousands of applicants for SNAP were caught in a backlog that left hungry Alaskans waiting months for benefits. The U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason granted an injunction in 2024 that required the state to process applications on time and report to the court on its progress clearing the backlog. Last fall, the state argued the Supreme Court's 2025 decision in Medina versus Planned Parenthood South Atlantic meant that the federal SNAP statute did not create a right for Alaskans to have their applications processed on time. On May 21st, Gleason agreed with the state. The decision also means the state will no longer have to update the court on its progress, speeding its processing timelines. As of the last report, the Division of Public Assistance was processing only 29% of SNAP applications on time, and the average processing time was more than a month and a half. An attorney involved in the case told the Anchorage Daily News the plaintiffs plan to appeal. A portion of the suit alleging the delays violate the Alaska Constitution could continue in state court, according to the ruling. And it's 54 degrees and cloudy out this afternoon. This is KTOO.